It was supposed to be the start of a summer adventure. Friendship bracelets, campfire songs, sleeping under the stars. But on the first night at Camp Scott, something unthinkable happened. Three young girls were brutally murdered in their tent. The case would haunt a small community for decades. And still, after all these years, questions remain. Welcome back to Macabre Mondays, where mystery meets the macabre with your favorite deadly married duo. I'm Ale.
And I'm Tom.
Your guides through the strange, the sinister, and the spooky, where, you know, I tell the stories and he gets dragged along for the ride. On today's episode, do you want to take a guess?
At where we're going?
Yeah.
Wisconsin.
No.
Damn it. All right,
one day you'll get it.
I'm not going to go as far as I did the last few
times. No, one day you'll get it. One day you'll get it. It's okay to work out. We're actually going to Oklahoma.
So we're not in Kansas anymore?
No, we're not in Kansas anymore.
They weren't in Kansas.
Who are you talking about?
I don't know. Twisters.
Oh, they were in Oklahoma. Yeah. Are you talking about...
I think...
What the hell are you talking about?
I was thinking of Wizard of Oz. I don't know why.
Isn't that Kansas?
That is Kansas.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Anyways, thanks for that. We'll move forward. So we're going to Oklahoma today. Now, usually when we start off these episodes, I don't like to tell Tom or you guys anything until we're kind of going along the ride, because this is the first time he's hearing these stories. But today's episode is going to be a lot more tougher to hear just because it involves children. Okay, now I'll make sure to place some trigger warnings where I can. Today's case might be tough to hear, and especially
a little bit heavy.
Yeah, very heavy. And I think for people who do have kids, this is kind of where, I mean, not saying for people who don't have kids don't feel the same, but you know, there's just a different element there.
You know, this week you've been really fucking me up.
Why would I do this week?
Well, the first movie we went to see, that wasn't that bad.
You're talking about Final Destination?
Yeah, that was okay. Great. Loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Then Bring Her Back. Cinematic, very good movie in
Tom's
that aspect.
Like, chef's kiss masterpiece.
But that movie was insane.
No, that movie was deep. If anybody,
so
no one
up.
Hasn't seen
Wild.
It. Yeah, it's gory. It's gory.
Very
it's,
gory.
It's an A24 film, but actually it was really, really good.
It was very good.
Yeah.
And now you're putting me through this.
Yeah.
All in 1 week.
All in 1 week, just for you.
I think next
just
week.
Just for you.
I need the week full of comedy. It's my birthday month.
Oh, yeah.
Be we'll nice see. To me.
I am being nice to you. All right. So today we're in Locust Grove, Oklahoma, to be exact. Have you ever heard of it?
I have not.
Me either. Honestly, I haven't heard anything past Indiana. And the only reason why I know Indiana is because of you.
All those middle states you forget about.
Yeah,
Montana,
yeah.
Nebraska.
Yeah. Just
I don't think some
there.
Of them actually exist.
I don't even know if the West Coast exists, to be honest. It sounds like... It's just wherever I am, it's on the opposite side, upwards, like north and south.
I mean,
I only know
to
the
be
East
fair,
Coast.
We do have listeners over in Cali and all on that
we
coast.
We do.
So
no, we so do.
Something's out there. There
it's the government. No, I mean,
Area 51 has 50 listens. Groom Lake.
I'd be like, whoa, dude, that's crazy. No, that is true. I'm just being silly, guys. Okay, I know
you're
you guys
such
exist.
A silly girl.
I'm such a silly girl. Yeah. So I've never heard of Locust Grove, Oklahoma, either before. It's a small town with just over 1,000 people, so pretty small. And it's the kind of place where everyone knows each other. I mean, as you can imagine. This is a place where generations of families have stayed rooted. It's also part of the Cherokee Nation. A large portion of the town's residents are indigenous, mostly Cherokee, and their culture, their language, and the history are woven into their daily lives there.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Locust Grove sits in Mays County, which falls within the Cherokee Nation's jurisdiction. This is one of the largest federally recognized tribes in the country, which I did not really know that. I learned a lot.
I was going to say, I know we have a lot of Native Americans throughout the U.S. I know in Indiana, I can't remember what tribe it is, but I remember a girl I went to school with, her whole family was Native American.
Oh, wow.
And they
that's
used to put like presentations on for us.
Oh, that's so cool. That's awesome. Yeah, I didn't really learn about that at all, which of course they don't want you to learn anything because they want to erase history.
Anyways, I was going to say, you also grew up in the tri-state area, so you had a lot of diversity
already. Yeah, but I think I've only met one Native American, and it was in college. Yeah. Hmm. And the only reason I knew that he was in a tribe was because he told me that his school was paid for, but he had to pay for room and board.
If you're ever going to college.
No, I mean, it's not that simple.
There is scholarships for everything. Blue eyes.
No, boom, there is. Scholarship. It's so true. I never knew that. I never knew that until with you and my brother, because he was also doing a bunch of scholarships or random stuff. And I'm like, what? I mean, there's even a scholarship for left-handed people.
Which that one's wild.
Yeah, well, the left-handed community is very small. It's very small, very far few in between.
They do get graphite on their hands as they're writing, because they have to rub their hand across everything they just wrote.
If you're left-handed, leave us a comment. I want to see how many of our listeners are left-handed. But that's when I learned that Native American students can have their college tuition paid for.
Paid for.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Which is cool. Yeah. And while it feels like it's tucked away in the hills, it's really not that far from the city. It's just under an hour drive to Tulsa, Oklahoma. And then I also looked up how far it would be to go from Locust Grove to Oklahoma City, because that's another common area.
Yeah.
You know. And that was in between like 2 to 3 hours, depending on traffic or whatnot. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah, that's not, I mean, that's like anywhere in outside of Orlando.
I was going to say.
That I-4 traffic will get your ass.
No, seriously. And you're actually going places. Yeah, no, seriously. So let's step back in time for a moment to early summer of June 12th, 1977 in Oklahoma. Over 130 Girl Scouts and Brownies had just arrived at Camp Scott, excited for 2 weeks filled with adventure, friendship, and memories in the making. Now, I know you were a Boy Scout.
Yep.
Okay. How long were you a Boy Scout for?
I think it starts as Cub Scout or Tiger Scout.
Oh, wow. So like baby?
Oh, yeah.
Aww.
I mean, I started in elementary school and stayed with, and I earned my life. I was super close to earning my Eagle Scout.
Yeah, so close. I know. You're still talking about that.
Then I aged out.
Dang it. So do you know much about Girl Scouts? Because I did not.
Both my sisters were Girl Scouts. My mom was actually the cookie mom, or whatever they called it.
Oh, that is so cute.
She used to bring home, when it was cookie selling time, my dad's office was filled with boxes of cookies.
Of course.
Same when I started selling Boy Scout popcorn, she became the Colonel mom.
Oh,
and she
that's
would have
so
all
cute.
The popcorn. Popcorn does not smell as good as cookies, though.
Yeah, no, I mean, let's I agree. But you guys got to sell something of your own. Can't always copy the girls, okay? What's the saying? Boys go to Mars. No. Damn. No, that's not what it is. Whatever. Anyways, I'm going to move forward. Okay, so we're stepping back in time, okay? Brownies, because I was like, what is a brownie? Okay, a brownie.
It's a younger Girl Scout, right?
Yes, it's a Girl Scout in the second and third grade, so ages around 7 and 9, okay?
It's like Cub Scouts.
Yes, pretty much. And which, such a cute name, totally delish.
Okay, cannibal.
I meant because of brownies, the dessert, but anyways. So over 130 Girl Scouts and Brownies had just arrived at Camp Scott, excited for their 2 weeks filled with adventure, friendship, and memories in the making. Now, Camp Scott was a 410-acre Girl Scout camp in Locust Grove.
Okay.
That's ginormous. And it was operated by the Magic Empire Council. Now, this wasn't a small event, okay? Girls came from all over the Tulsa area, bringing together kids from the Mays, the Rogers, Payne Creek, and Osage counties, and even beyond that. So it was designed to house several units within the campsite.
The camp.
Yeah, the campsite.
It's like summer camp.
Pretty much, yeah. And so each unit had around 7 to 8 tents raised on wooden platforms with canvas covers.
Oh,
you're like, this is a different camp.
Oh, shoot. Okay, you know what? I take back all the things I said as a kid. I used to make fun of Girl Scouts because I thought they all slept in hotels and stuff when they went camping. This is the same type of tent that as a Boy Scout we would sleep in.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Wow, that's funny.
Our summer camp looks just like this.
You thought we were glamping?
Yes.
Why would you think that?
It was Girl Scouts.
Sorry, not my problem.
That was what we were sold.
Oh, clearly. No, I could tell. So you see how in their raised wooden platforms. Mm-hmm. So now it's a raised wooden platform. It's got like a two-step just to get up top. Big, big canvas-y
tarp.
I'm going to post photos online as well, but I'm going to just describe it a little bit. And inside, I mean, they have like a cot with twin mattresses that go on them, very thin. Makes and all sense. That. Yeah. And then yeah. you use your sleeping bag Same and you thing. Sleep over it. Yes, exactly. So you're not tenting it on the ground.
No.
Yeah. Now, each of these units had a unique name. Today's case takes us specifically to the Kiowa unit, a quiet, secluded section on the far edge of the camp. The Kiowa unit was already pretty remote out of all the other units in Camp Scott.
Now, is this map a map of like the whole area? Or
so, yeah, that is a map. Section? Yeah, that is a map of the one on the left is a map of Camp Scott itself. So you can see all the other units that are in there. And the tent that is marked red in a red X, that is where they are. That is where the Kiowa unit is.
Okay.
Okay.
Makes sense.
And then the one on the right is pretty much how the unit is laid out.
Okay. So it's like the individual campsites.
Yes. Okay, cool. Yes. The individual campsite. Now within Kiowa were 8 tents, each one raised slightly off the ground, like I said, with the wooden platforms and the heavy canvas. Now tent number 8, the tent where our case centers. Okay. Online, there's a lot of different either tent 7 or tent 8 or whatnot. It depends on who was the numbering system. Some people count the camp counselor's tent. Some people don't. They started from, you know, tent 1.
But needless to say, we know.
Needless to say, I mean, we're going to go tent 8 if you hear tent number 8, okay? This tent sat farthest from the counselor's quarters, nestled right at the edge of the woods, hidden from view by the camp's communal shower facilities. Now, to that photo that you see on the right, that is... pretty yeah. much shows you. Now, to help our listeners pretty much picture it better, and also for you too, so imagine the Kiowa unit like the face of a clock, okay? So tent 8, where the girls were staying, was up at around 12 o'clock. And the counselor's tent, where Carla Wilhite was sleeping, was down at 6 o'clock. And right in the middle, like the center point that holds the clock hands together, was the communal shower and bathrooms. Okay, so you see yeah. that there's clearly no point. Like, that you can't... from the camp counselor's tent, you can't see tent 8.
Yeah.
Because what's blocking its view is the communal showers and the little...
Yeah. And then off to the right, it looks like there's like the little latrine.
Yes. Yes. Okay. And so, and on the other parts of the clock, you know, like 7, 8, 9, 10, are the other tents. Okay. With the other girls staying, because there's 8 tents here. Now, assigned to tent 8 was Lori Lee Farmer, who was 8. She was a gymnast, an avid reader, and a doting big sister to her 4 younger siblings. She loved being a big sister and was always excited when her parents brought a baby home. It was the cutest thing ever, and she is just, you'll see.
A ball of joy.
Yes. Michelle Heather Gousset was 9. She was very shy, athletic, and enjoyed taking care of houseplants, especially African violets that I saw, which was really interesting. Yo, but how cute is that?
I was just going to say, I feel like kids back in the day had so many cooler hobbies.
Yeah, imagine going to school and being like, my African violet plant. And nowadays it's like,
no, for real.
You see my hoverboard?
Literally.
No joke.
I got the new Xbox.
Yeah.
That's what kids talk about nowadays.
Dude, show me what's in your pantry.
In your pantry?
Yeah, like what cool snacks you got from all, you know, you have family like that come and visit and they bring like all these snacks. Yeah.
Okay, I forget you grew up in Jersey. We didn't have family that came from out of state.
You're like, they're coming.
Or no, not out of state.
From out of
overseas.
The country. Yeah, over the seas. Yeah. And then there was Doris Denise Milner, who goes by Denise. She was 10. A straight-A student who had taught herself to read, write, and do math. Like, her mother said that she was just super sweet, was really great. And as you can see in the photo, all 3 of them, absolutely beautiful, cute girls. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, just makes my heart melt. Now, this was the only tent that was hidden from view of Carla Wilhite's tent, who was the camp counselor.
Because the showers were kind of blocking.
Exactly.
Makes sense.
And also, tent 8 was also a little bit ways further away from the camp a bit compared to all the other tents. They were a lot closer. Okay, so this one was already kind of outcasted, essentially. It was roughly around 75 to 85 feet away from the camp counselor's tent to tent 8. Okay, which is what? 3 school buses? I don't know. Something like that. Right? Don't quote me on that, okay? I'm just human.
I love your measurement system.
Now,
subway foot long, school bus.
This is how it works in my brain, okay? This is who I am. Okay, you married me. You vowed.
I did.
You knew that the math wasn't math in there, okay?
When I'm doing my woodwork, I'm so glad that you're not like, yeah, could you cut that piece of wood to subway foot long? Can you cut that piece? That needs to be about half a bus length.
All right, you done?
Yes.
You done now?
Let's go.
Okay, thank you. Now, usually in each tent, there is around three to four girls. Okay. Usually it's four, but you know, there might be random cancellations. Some people might not show up. Maybe there's some movement. So this is why.
I mean, that makes sense. Yeah. Why the tents are also big. Exactly. Ours were not that big. We only had two to the tent.
Oh, wow. Okay. So yeah. So these were a lot bigger. So in tent eight, that's why there was only three girls. Now, before we move forward, I need to mention something important. Because 2 months before June 12th, during a staff training session 2 months prior, counselors discovered a disturbing handwritten note inside an empty box at camp. And it read, "We are on a mission to kill three girls in tent one."
What the hell?
Yeah. Staff.
Randomly left?
Yeah. They found it. They were doing their...
What the fuck?
Mm-hmm. Staff took the note to the camp directors, but it was ultimately dismissed as a prank. No formal investigation was conducted, and they didn't report the note to the authorities either. Camp staff also reported that personal items of theirs, including a pair of prescription sunglasses, flashlights, and other small belongings, had gone missing from the counselor's tent the night before June 12th.
That's weird.
Right, another weird occurrence. That first evening at Camp Scott in the Kiowa unit, the girls filled the air with, laughter, songs, the kind of excitement and chatter that,
Yeah. First that night summer away. Camp brings.
Yeah, exactly. Your first night away from home, you're hanging out with friends, you're going to have a blast. They all had dinner together in the large communal dining hall or mess hall or I don't know, whatever they call it.
Yeah, that.
That. Gathered around tables, they were talking about their plans, about for the summer, and they were all writing letters home because this is what you did. Did you also do the same thing?
We didn't. I don't think we actually ever wrote letters home.
Well, no. they're going to be at camp for 2 weeks, so...
Oh, that's different. Yeah, we were only at camp for a week at a time.
Okay.
We were never, even winter campery, stuff like that, it was only the weekend. The longest thing was the summer.
Were the Boy Scouts kind of like, you want to ride home? Where are you, baby?
No, we were not like that. We were not like that. Okay,
double checking, wasn't sure. Wasn't sure.
We had phones, and I mean, people, including myself, I used to get homesick. So every once in a while, we would ask. My dad used to go. Typically, he would try to get off so that he could go to camp with me. But if he couldn't and I wanted to call home, then I typically would just ask somebody if I could call home.
Oh, okay, cool. So. Yeah. Well, also, this was 1977.
Yeah, a little different.
Right. Did you go? The 2000s.
I didn't go back then. Damn.
No, I know. Imagine.
Yeah, I went all the way up till, would have been 2013 was my last year as a scout. And then 2014, or no.
All right,
2012,
let it go.
And
great.
Then 2013, I went as a counselor.
All right, cool. So
okay. that's pretty
cool.
Cool.
Anyways, next. No. All right. So that's all right. So you get it. But yeah, 1977, they're writing letters home. Many of these letters filled with enthusiasm for all the adventures that awaited them. Okay. They're going to be canoeing. They're going to be hiking. They're going to be exploring great outdoors. Yeah. S'mores. I mean, you could think of the snacks. But other letters came from girls who were scared about being in the dark woods and wanting to go home. Denise Milner was one of those girls. Remember, she's in tent eight.
Yeah.
Now, she was 10. She wrote to her mom that day saying, "Mom, I don't want to stay at camp for 2 weeks. I want to come home." Now, Denise, from what I was seeing, she was just the type of kid that would say she wants to go places. And then when the time comes, she would just not want to go. So she actually...
Feel that.
Right. And I'm like, totally relatable girl. She actually begged her mom to go to camp some weeks prior. And then when the time came, she was begging her not to go to camp anymore.
Damn.
Yeah. And her mom.
I mean, completely get that.
Right.
Get that.
Right. I mean, I feel like we've all been there. I've been a kid like that too, where I'm like, no.
Homesickness is a real thing, guys.
I was feeling some type of way. It's a real thing. Yeah, I was feeling some type of way before. Her mom had already paid and told her, but you know what? You you say you want to go somewhere and then you don't. So her mom told her, okay, you will go for at least one day. And if you still want to come home after today, then I will go and just pick you up.
Oh. Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah. So now Lori Farmer, she also wrote a cheerful letter home to her family, excited about her first night, saying that she was making all kinds of friends and looking forward to camp for the next 2 weeks. I had also read and saw that there are plenty of interviews of the families. So Lori's mother talks about holding a lot of guilt about this about what happened till this day, because Lori came to her telling her that she wanted to go to camp, and her mom had two choices, either Camp Scott or the YMCA camp, and she sent her to Camp Scott.
Camp Scott.
Yeah. Michelle Gousset was assigned to Tent 8 as well, alongside Lori and Denise, and the three girls quickly formed a bond upon arriving to Camp Scott.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Now, while Denise and Lori's letter home is well documented, okay, there's not much available information about the letter that Michelle sent home.
Okay.
So around dinner time, there was a mean storm coming in, okay? The reports and the interviews, like, it was heavy rain, thunder, and to keep everyone safe, counselors decided to wrap things up early, guiding the girls back to their tents sooner than planned.
Okay.
Okay, which makes sense. The campers were settling in, you know, finishing off their letters, probably laughing super softly, chattering and stuff like that. I mean, it's the first night of camp.
Yeah, the excitement's going to definitely, yeah, and there's a, you know, be there.
Right, and there's a storm coming in. But what none of them knew, what nobody really could have possibly imagined, was how drastically things were going to change by morning. As darkness fully enveloped Camp Scott on June 12th of 1977, the gentle rain quickly escalated into a full-blown storm.
Okay.
Now, this storm is so bad that there's, like, racks of thunder and bright flashes of lightning that are, know, you'd like that Florida storm we had that one time where we actually got freaked out.
Yeah, but this sounds like a good camping storm.
I guess, yeah. True. I mean, I wouldn't be caught out there.
As long as I'm dry.
I wouldn't be caught out there, but yes. Miss me. So you can already imagine, right? The bright flashes. You can probably see the silhouette of the trees on the canvas tent. It's so scary. I know, I watched too many scary movies. Now, at the Kiowa unit, counselors made one last check around the tents before retreating to their
own tents.
Yeah, before retreating to their own tents. They assumed, you know, all the girls are safe and sound, tucked into their sleeping bags, and everything will be all right. But around 1:30 in the morning, counselor Carla Wilhite woke up to an unsettling noise, a low, guttural moan. She describes it as a sound between a foghorn and a bullfrog.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so imagine that. She grabs her flashlight to head outside and check out what that noise
was.
What's
going on?
But each time she approached closer to that sound, it would stop.
What?
When she walked away, it would start up again. When she tried waking the other counselors and kind of, you know, letting them know, like, something's happening. I don't know, I keep hearing this weird noise. They all kind of just chalked it up to, it's probably just an animal or something, right? And since you were getting close, you know, whatever.
Maybe, yeah.
So she ends up going back to sleep, and she actually says that as she went back to sleep, she could still hear the sound.
That's weird.
Why would you... Is that not normal?
Well, no, because, like, you hear sounds, but if it's... I don't know.
That
I guess
sound?
Yeah, I was just going to say, there's certain sounds that I feel like you're kind of used to as a camper, and...
True. That's a good point.
You know? Because would hear, like, bears and deer and all kinds of different animals, owls and shit.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess if I heard that type of sound, especially around that time, I wouldn't really be thinking it's an animal, because the only animals would be kind of predators. Like,
right.
I almost said a tiger, but we don't have tigers. But something along that nature.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't make noise like that.
Yeah.
That's why it's weird.
No, but that's a good point, because, she was a camp counselor. That's something that Carla also says, that she's been to camp since she was a kid, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a good point. But at that time, they ended up just going to sleep and shaking it off. Now, by dawn at 6 a.m., Carla's alarm goes off. The storm had moved on by this time, leaving behind a very, very wet camp. You know, you can imagine dripping leaves and muddy paths. Carla, now awake early and preparing for the day, began walking down the wooded path toward the communal showers. As she moved along the muddy trail, she spotted something unusual, a sleeping bag, lying abandoned on the damp ground near the edge of the woods right next to a tree.
That's weird.
As she got closer, her stomach dropped. It wasn't just a sleeping bag. Inside lay the lifeless body of a young girl. Her heart was racing. She quickly alerted the other counselors and camp officials and was like, listen, we need to count our girls and make sure everybody's here. Because this is what I just saw.
Jesus Christ.
Now, as we come to find out, not one, but all three girls from Tent 8 Lori Farmer, Michelle Gousset, and Denise Milner had been taken from their tent and brutally murdered.
Did they find all of them, or? I mean, I know we're probably getting into. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. You're good. Their bodies actually had been left on the wooden path between their tent and the showers.
What the hell?
Yeah, partially hidden, but carelessly abandoned. Now, they were all found together in sleeping bags.
Like all of them in one sleeping bag?
Mm-mm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Their sleeping bags just kind of in the same area.
I think it was two sleeping bags. Oh my God, don't kill me, people. But I think it was two sleeping bags because I'll get into it.
Okay.
As word spread quickly about the tragedy unfolding at Camp Scott, I mean, you can imagine panic and disbelief was really, really echoing through this Oklahoma community.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Investigators were wasting no time at arriving at the campsite, hoping to, you know, make sense of this unimaginable scene. Now, when authorities first inspected Tent 8, where Lori, Michelle, and Denise were in just hours before, inside, they found the chilling signs of struggle and violence. Among the heartbreaking clues was a distinct bloody shoe print imprinted on the wooden platform beneath their sleeping bags, where their sleeping bags would go.
Yeah.
Forensic experts quickly identified it as belonging to a man's size 9.5 shoe.
Okay.
The tent itself was soaked in blood. I mean, on the wooden floors, the canvas flaps, and even...
Jesus.
Yep, and even some of the bedding. Now, I'm going to place a trigger warning moving on. Based off the crime scene, what investigators believe happened. Sometime during the night, likely between maybe around like 2 to 3 a.m., there's really no specific time.
Yeah.
It's just, we know it's after 11 and before 6.
Okay.
And I'll talk more about it. The intruder approached Tent 8 from the rear, using the darkness and the storm as a cover. They believe the killer entered the tent while the girls were asleep and launched a brutal attack inside. Lori and Michelle were likely to have been killed first.
Okay.
Inside the tent. Now, Denise Milner is believed to have been taken alive, trigger warning, sexually assaulted, and then murdered at the scene where all the girls were found.
Jesus by the Christ. Tree.
They believe that Lori and Michelle were killed first in the tent because rigor mortis had already set in when they found the girls. So all while an investigator said that one of the girls, Denise, was still warm to the touch when they got to them, meaning that her murder most likely
happened later.
Yeah, happened a lot.
Jesus Christ.
They're also thinking that maybe our killer is not that far away, or, you know, because if she's still warm,
then...
Exactly. Now, this suggested to investigators that the killer may have fled the area when they heard Carla's alarm. And also would kind of make sense.
Oh, that morning?
That morning.
Oh,
yes.
So they think it was like...
No, yeah, because when they found the girls and one of the investigators got there, Denise was still
like,
warm
still
to the
warm.
Touch.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, so it's like...
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
This happened between... It had to have happened between after 11 p.m. and before 6 a.m.
No, I mean, Denise, though, since she was still warm, that means that would have happened...
Recent.
Really
yeah,
recent.
Yeah, really okay. recent. So that's why they're like, oh... And also the fact that they were just found left at the tree. You'll see... We'll keep talking more about it, but... That is what also gets investigators like, oh, did he get startled or the killer get startled and then drop the bags and run away? Like, drop this. You'll see. We'll talk a little bit more about it.
Are there like, never mind.
We'll get into it. We'll get into it, baby. Now, the killer did not drag the girls because there were no drag marks.
So he just picked them up?
Well, the girls were rolled up so tight at the end of their sleeping bags that when the investigators went into Tent 8, they found blood stains on the sleeping bags in a way that suggested that the killer slung each child over their shoulder using the sleeping bag like a makeshift
sack.
Like a sack, pretty much.
Yeah.
And one of the sources that I read put it as almost like Santa Claus.
Jesus Christ, what the hell?
So that's how they found the girls by the tree, pretty much like stuffed
mutilated
in
down there.
Yes, yeah, stuffed in their sleeping bag. Except Denise. Denise was actually
was the only
more
one
seen.
That was,
yeah, more seen.
Okay.
This was consistent with them being carried and then dropped. Okay. The girls were found approximately 150 feet from their tent near a fork in the trail by a tree. They also noticed that it must have been recent when the killer left them because the sleeping bags were still dry, and if it was raining like it was...
They would have all been soaked.
It would have been wet.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would have been soaked. Now, shockingly, it's been reported that the bodies of Lori and Michelle remained unopened in their sleeping bags for hours after investigators came. And I mean, some people are like, I mean, yeah, why didn't they just also open the bag? Because what if the girls were still alive? They weren't, but still it was kind of like, why are you not investigating the scene? But a lot of people would just say that it's, I mean, a lot of people describe that day as overwhelming chaos and just like so much shock at the scene. So I can only imagine, but I just had to mention,
I mean,
that
it's three little girls that were brutally murdered.
Yeah. In the middle of the night at camp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even as a cop, I couldn't imagine having to show up to that.
Right. Right. No, I agree. Now I got to place another trigger warning. Okay. All three of the girls were sexually assaulted, mutilated, brutally beaten, and strangulated.
And they think this was all done by one person?
The autopsy report showed that there was strong force that was used. Okay, now there was a total of upwards of over 400 pieces of evidence collected.
Holy fuck. Yeah.
Now you got to think about it too. There's a lot of stuff scattered around near this crime. I'll tell you what the main ones are. But we're also at a camp. We're in the woods. They don't really know what is evidence and what isn't. I mean, yeah, probably the most closest things, sure. But there could, I mean, if there's
especially
a
camp, if there's other girls that have come in, because at least at our camp, we used to do rounds. Like every week, there was a new set of campers that came in.
Okay.
So think about it. There's definitely, they stuff might have found stuff everywhere that was probably left from prior camps and stuff like that. So yeah, I can understand that.
Right, right. And so that's why I'm like, okay, because I remember I was reading something and it's like there are 400 pieces of evidence, but
They're not sure all that is fully evidence from this.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. So the ones that are scattered near the crime scene were a plastic trash bag, a pair of glasses, a hairbrush, makeup compact, like a makeup compact mirror, nylon rope, a crowbar, and duct tape. And,
you know, some of those definitely sound like they
they might be a part of the case.
Yeah. Just going off on a limb, I don't know many Girl Scouts that are like, you know what I need to take? Well, the nylon rope, I could maybe see.
The crowbar.
But the crowbar?
It's like,
I'm leaning towards it's definitely part of the crime in some aspect.
They're like, they looked in the refrigerator and there was ketchup, mustard, a human foot, and lettuce.
And a random machete. They believe the machete was used to cut cheese.
Yeah.
It had blood on it.
No joke. But the most notable piece of evidence was that the attacker and the killer left a red flashlight at the crime scene.
Okay, okay.
The killer covered the lens in a garbage bag and wrapped duct tape on it to seal the bag on the lens. In the garbage bag was a pin-sized hole poked through, which is a very chilling detail because that's only going to allow the killer enough light to move stealthily through the dark without being seen, or
because it's not going to light up everything.
Everything, just that small hole. Yeah. And this is like a, what would you call these type of flashlights?
That's like a almost,
like a lantern,
like a floodlight,
of,
a more floodlight. Of like a floodlight, yes. Yeah. Which also, what?
And it's red.
If you're gonna do this, why wouldn't you get a smaller light? I'm not condoning this,
right? Right.
But at
right,
the same
right,
time,
right.
Like, why wouldn't you just get a smaller flashlight? Right.
Good question. I don't. I mean, yeah, clearly there's something.
Unless he went hiking for a long ass time, and then when he got closer, then he was like, oh, now I need to be more discreet.
And I also feel if these type of flashlights or kind of floodlights, like you're saying. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a floodlight.
Is that usually kind of what a camper would usually have?
Yeah.
Because you're in the woods.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I would say so. Especially kind of like that.
Right. It's a little chunky. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's chunky. It's big. Yeah. Inside the flashlight's casing, a small piece of newspaper that had been wedged in, possibly to hold the batteries in place. A single fingerprint was found on the lens.
Okay.
But it was too smudged to be identified.
Of course.
Sorry. Remember when I said that multiple counselors reported small personal belongings missing the night before the murders?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Including sunglasses and a flashlight and whatnot. Now, a lot of those weren't what was found near or by the crime scene. So that started raising the idea that the killer had been at the camp the night before and had possibly been watching and maybe preparing.
Preparing, like plotting everything.
Something, yeah.
That's weird.
It's starting
dude.
To get
what
real premeditated. I know. Now, investigators recovered forensic evidence. Okay.
Okay.
We've got hair strands, semen samples, the bloody shoe print, which was the 9.5 print inside the tent. Now, I also was reading somewhere that inside the tent, it was very bloody in there, and that the killer was trying to maybe wipe some of the blood up or whatnot.
Like it was so it looks, smeared or
yeah,
something?
Certain things like that. Now, they did have, like I said, the hair strands, the semen samples, the bloody shoe print. However, testing in the 1970s, I mean, kind of limiting.
Yeah, and you also didn't have nearly the level of evidence. Whatever.
Right,
you
to
know
process,
what I mean.
Yeah, the stuff to process all of that, right? And I looked it up because in the 1970s, no DNA profiling existed yet. Hair could only be microscopically compared, not matched definitively, so really. And blood types could be identified, but not linked to any individuals.
Okay.
So imagine.
So basically all DNA testing is out.
Out,
and
yeah. To give you
concrete
evidence.
You basically just had fingerprints.
Yeah, like it's pretty much like I'm going to need a rock solid.
Yeah.
I'm going to need the body.
I just like, need you to tell me that you
yes.
did it.
Now, evidence collection when this case took place was deeply flawed at times because there was items that were moved. There were items that were handled without gloves or not cataloged properly or whatnot. This is also the 1970s. I'm sure nobody's.
Yeah.
I think we've came a long way from there. Even though when I see cases nowadays, like the Karen
there,
Reed
yes,
one.
Yes, there are
but
certain
still,
cases that
I
are still
it.
Not handled great. But
yeah, but I get it.
I think
right?
it's just experience at times too.
Now, investigators would later say, you know, it was over 400 pieces of evidence that they gathered. And I'm going to talk more about evidence mishandling later on as we get into it,
okay?
Because there's something that plays later. Now, meanwhile, the families of Lori, Michelle, and Denise were receiving the devastating news that no parent would ever want to hear. It is reported that Michelle's parents found out about their daughter, found out in the on the TV that a bad accident had happened at Camp Scott. Lori's
damn.
Parents, her dad is a doctor, and was at the hospital working when the director called him to like the nurse's station to tell him the news that something bad had happened. A colleague ended up driving him home to tell Lori's mom what happened to their little girl. And Denise's mom also found out at work as well. A colleague came to her to tell her the news. So you can just imagine how everyone is feeling
yeah.
right now. Yeah.
Damn.
And I know I couldn't really, I'm not sure if Denise was or is a nurse or a teacher, but it was in one of those two
something
realms.
Something like that, yeah.
So right now they're all feeling a bunch of shock, grief, and disbelief because what the
yeah.
hell just
your,
happened?
Your child went to what was supposed to be a safe, fun-filled
mm-hmm.
weekend.
Right.
And then you get that kind of a call?
Right. And to think
shit,
that,
dude.
And to think that Denise was begging her mom not to go.
Yeah.
That kills me.
That would eat me up if I was her parents.
Me. Yeah, that kills me. That kills me. I read somewhere that the camp's first call wasn't to their parents. It was actually to their lawyer and their insurance, which not very cutesy, not very demure,
no.
very ugly, very nasty.
I won't lie, it's kind of typical though.
Very embarrassing, yes. Now, the pressing question echoing in everyone's mind, obviously, who the fuck could commit such a horrifying act? Okay,
yeah.
Especially in a place so seemingly safe as Locust Grove, where everyone knows everyone and like
who the fuck would have done this?
Yes. With pressure mounting, investigators knew that they really had no time to lose, okay? They had footprints, they had the flashlight, they had that note. But what they needed most was a suspect. They need a name. They need
an actual
put a face.
Person, yeah.
Yes. Now, with this entire state watching and the pressure to find answers mounting, investigators began piecing together what little they had.
Not much to go off
yeah.
of.
I'm going to mention one of the suspects, okay? Because I'm gonna just clear him out.
Ooh.
Bill Stevens. Some people believe that this man, Bill Stevens, might have been involved because a woman claimed that she gave Stevens the flashlight. Or gave Stevens a flashlight, one that was very similar to the one found at the scene, which clearly is going to cast suspicion on him. I also was reading that he also was in jail or he was a criminal or something.
Okay.
I don't know. It was interesting. But however, she later ended up recanting her story. And there really was never no physical evidence that ever linked Stevens to the murders.
It was just like hearsay.
Yeah, and to be honest, why she lied, I mean, no one really knows. I mean,
maybe
I feel
she
like
just didn't like him or something. She was like, yeah, it was probably that guy. He's weird.
Well, I heard things that she actually did know him and maybe was trying to help him get out of... I don't know. I'm really, to be honest, if somebody knows about that, let us know. Yeah, okay. Because to be honest, I didn't find anything on that. And I was like, okay, he's cleared. They pretty much, the authorities never named, he wasn't a serious suspect. So move on. But as they scoured the evidence and mapped out possibilities, one name was resurfacing, a name that would quickly become synonymous with this case.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm going to have to leave you off for part one. I know.
You understand this is now the third time
I know
you've done this to us.
Damn, you're really mad. Yes.
The people are mad.
Well, I just want you
Somebody's punching their fist in the air. Somebody's honking their horn right now.
Someone like shutting their laptop. Someone's like flipping, closing their phone super fast. Well, I hope it...
Just made somebody's workday really bad.
Really bad, I know. Well, I hope it makes you guys feel better with the fact that I didn't think it was going to be a two-parter. Until I noticed that it was going to be a two-parter. So I go into it not wanting it to be a two-parter.
Until I knew.
Yeah, exactly. And I just want you guys to know, okay? All right? Don't be so mad at me.
Whatever.
But
we'll see you guys next week.
Yes, we'll see you guys next week for part two, okay? Make sure you listen to this episode. I mean, if you're listening right now, you're probably listening. But anyway, but yeah.
Anyways.
All right, so we'll see you next week. Please stay tuned. Thank you for joining us today on Macabre Mondays. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. And hey, if you know more about today's episode or caught a detail we might have missed, let us know.
But don't spill any secrets.
Yeah.
We still got to get into part two.
We're still in part one. Yes.
We'd love to hear from you guys. Seriously. If you have a story that's strange, sinister, or downright spooky, doesn't matter how small you think it may be, send it our way. You can email us at macabremondayspodcast@gmail.com or head over to macabremondays.com to submit your story. Yours just might be featured in an upcoming listener episode.
Follow us on social media by searching Macabre Mondays for photos of today's episode, updates, and a little extra spooky fun. We'll see you next Monday for another sinister, strange, and spooky episode. Stay tuned. More mysteries just around the corner. But until then, stay curious and stay safe. Bye, everyone.
Peace up, Baytown.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Bye.